The United States believes the people of China deserve the fundamental liberty that is the natural right of all human beings. So America stands in firm opposition to China's detention of political dissidents and human rights advocates and religious activists. I have spoken clearly and candidly and consistently with China's leaders about our deep concerns over religious freedom and human rights.
It's President Bush speaking very recently on the Taiwan border about China. Of course, the Olympics are going to begin tomorrow in Beijing. A lot has been read and written about the human rights condition there, and that's what the president is responding to, ever vigilant of the human rights abuses of this communist nation. But is communism the only problem there in China? What do the religious views, the indigenous religions of the Chinese people that are believed and practiced in that country and elsewhere in the world, have to do with human rights? But also, what are those religions? What kind of a worldview do they form, or what kind of a worldview do they grow out of? We're going to answer those questions for the next hour of Issues, Etc. Greetings and welcome. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Issues, Etc. is a live call-in program. We are coming to you live this Thursday, August the 7th. You can join us, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-MYIE, or email us right here in the studio with questions or comments for Dr. John Warg Montgomery. Talkback at issuesetc.org. Talkback at issuesetc.org. Dr. John Warg Montgomery is a regular guest professor emeritus at the University of Bedfordshire in England. He's a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, and a member of the bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He's distinguished research professor of philosophy and Christian thought at Patrick Henry College, and author and editor of more than 50 books, including Giants in Change. Dr. Montgomery, welcome back.
Niao, that's Mandarin for hello.
Oh, thank you very much. Hello to you as well. Dr. Montgomery, we hear a lot about communism being the root of many of the human rights abuses, but is there a relationship between the religious views, the religions believed and practiced by the Chinese people and elsewhere in the region, and the human rights abuses that so many are so concerned about in China?
Well, that's actually the theme of my book, Giant in Chains, China Today and Tomorrow. I deal with the traditional religions of China, which are our folk beliefs and rather occultic in nature, and also the classic religions of China, Taoism and Confucianism and Buddhism, Buddhism being an import from India, but it became of tremendous importance in China. And I argue in the book that not a single one of these religious positions maintains a transcendent ethic that can speak critically and prophetically to a totalitarian regime. And indeed, the entire history of China has been a history of autocratic rule of one kind and another. Many of the listeners to this program probably saw the film of a number of years ago, The Last Emperor. Well, my argument is there's never been a last emperor. That is to say, after the fall of the last official emperor, in came the local rulers, and then finally the communist takeover. And in all of these situations, the Chinese people have been passive. They have not opposed authoritarian rule at all, and there isn't anything in these religious positions to do that. That's a staggering contrast with Christianity, which has a very specific biblical standard of human rights and civil liberties, and which has been the basis of the West's growth in these areas, whilst in China we haven't seen this kind of thing at all. The only influences in China that are pushing toward human rights are influences that have come from the Christian West.
You actually have a story to tell about the famous Tiananmen Square incident there in China. You were in Beijing around that time. Tell us what you saw. Tell us your story.
Yes, my wife and I were in China in the 2 weeks immediately preceding the Tiananmen Square slaughter. We were on the last plane that got out of the Beijing airport before it was closed down. This was quite a hairy experience in every respect. And the irony of it is that the students who were occupying Tiananmen Square there in the center of Beijing were not intending to overthrow the regime or anything like that. All they wanted was an increase in the ability to speak freely, to assemble freely, rights that are simply taken for granted in the West. But the rulers, the communist rulers, were so threatened by that that they cleaned out the square, and we don't know how many students were killed, but it's probably in the neighborhood of 1,000. The whole thing was then hushed up, and they have never been willing, the government has never been willing to admit what actually happened. And anybody who has tried to remember the Tiananmen Square slaughter has, of course, been viciously repressed. It's a sad example of the kind of operation that takes place where there is a communist dictatorship.
Okay. Someone says, well, you know, a lot of years have passed since Tiananmen Square, and especially in terms of trade with the Western world, China has opened a lot of doors there, and it seems as though maybe a breeze is blowing through there, at least in terms of the capitalist impulse in China. So things must have improved. As far as we can tell, what is the current condition with regard to human rights before we turn to the issue of these religions in China today?
Well, economically, the situation is much more open today than it was at the time of the Tiananmen Square mess, and immensely more open than during the time of Mao. But when it comes to any protest against government policy or any kind of criticism of the regime, this is ruthlessly repressed today just as much as it has been in the past. And it's very interesting here in Europe. There have been reports of the problems that journalists have been running into at the Olympic Games. The internet has been radically limited. No Tibetan material, for example, is able to be accessed on the internet. Indeed, if the website name or the name in the email has Tibet in it, in all likelihood, that is automatically censored. And this has even meant that during the games, international information, that is, international sources of information, have been blocked. And this is simply typical of the regime. They don't want any criticism of any kind whatsoever. Censorship is rife in China, and the Tibetan situation, of course, is a particular evidence of this. They have been absolutely dreadful to the inhabitants of Tibet. Lhasa has been turned into a prison camp, effectively, so that there won't be any trouble evident during the Olympic Games. So from the standpoint of civil liberties, the situation has not really improved in China.
Is there a modicum, any measure of religious freedom to speak of in China today?
Well, yes, there is, in the sense that religious organizations, if they are on a official government list, can function. And in the case of the Christian church, there are really two kinds of churches. There are the official churches, which are flourishing, and then there are the underground churches, the house churches, which are ruthlessly repressed, according to the news reports that we've had over here, pastors of these underground churches where they have been found have been deported from major cities, especially from Beijing, and some of them have been jailed just to make sure that they will not have any contact with the Olympic visitors.
Okay, let's talk about the status of Christianity for a minute before, as we transition to the religious aspect of this. Dr. Montgomery, I'm wondering, what is the apparent view here of the communist government in China vis-a-vis Christianity, the house churches, and things like that? Why do they see them as targets of repression?
Well, simply because they are not under the thumb of the government. It isn't that the government is necessarily going to interfere with what's going on in the church. It's that any totalitarian government is frightened witless of anything that isn't under their control. They don't want to have anything that even theoretically could be operating outside of the government's control. That's the nature of totalitarianism. The fact of the matter is that since Mao threw out all the missionaries from China, since that time, the Christian church in China has grown astronomically. It has grown staggeringly in numbers through the personal evangelism that's taken place by the indigenous Chinese. And as a result of this, there are some very, very large and strong Christian churches in China. The government doesn't mind this in the slightest as long as they're on the list and they can be supervised.
Let's take a break right there, Dr. Montgomery. This is interesting. Not necessarily the brightest picture for human rights and religious rights. And when we come back, we'll also talk about the indigenous religions of China. Believe it or not, folk religions, far more important in China than elsewhere in the world. We'll talk about that with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery right after this. We've got nothing against bumper stickers, just bumper sticker theology. And we'd like to send you the new Issues Etc. bumper sticker. You'll find the Issues Etc. logo, slogan, and website address. Simply send your request to Lutheran Public Radio, 1600 Gulfview Drive, Suite 230, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please include a self-addressed stamped envelope. Good theology doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but you can tell people where to find good theology, the new Issues Etc. bumper or window sticker.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and click on-demand audio. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. on-demand audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week. issuesetc.org, and click on-demand audio.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Some members of Congress are eager to pass legislation that would use federal funds for research that involves removing stem cells from human embryos. So what's the big deal? Removing stem cells from human embryos kills them. Embryos are human beings at their earliest stages. Embryos have begun the process of developing after fertilization and have everything necessary to develop into adults just like you or me. They only need time, nourishment, and a safe place to grow. Adult stem cells retrieved from ethical sources are already being used to help cure patients with a variety of conditions in clinical settings every day. And every day, successful new treatments are being developed. So, with so many promising treatments being developed from adult stem cells, why use our tax dollars to destroy innocent human life? Send the message to Congress that we want funding for ethical treatments that work, not for research that requires killing human embryos. This has been a perspective on life from National Right to Life at www.nrlc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is our guest. We're talking about the indigenous religions and the religions that are practiced and believed in China, how they expect not only the worldviews, but also the human rights condition in that largest of countries on our planet. We're talking about a lot of people. And we're talking about, in some cases, if we're just going to talk about it in terms of one nation, the majority of people all gathered in one nation. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-MYIE. Our in-studio email address live this Thursday, August the 7th, talkback at issuesetc.org. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is a professor emeritus at the University of Bedfordshire in England, a French advocate and barrister at law. in England and Wales, a member of the bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He's Distinguished Research Professor of Philosophy and Christian Thought at Patrick Henry College, and he's authored and edited more than 50 books, including Giant in Chains. You can find out more about this and other books by Dr. Montgomery under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Issuesetc.org, click On Demand, and you'll find more about this book and the others by Dr. John Warwick Montgomery. Dr. Montgomery, you said that it's really a matter of control over these things. As long as control can be exercised, there will be an officially sanctioned Christian church, such as it is in China. What kind of control, then, can the priests or the pastors preach as they like? Can they teach as they like and practice as they like?
They must not criticize the government. They cannot carry out a prophetic ministry, but as long as they stick to theology without reference to social ethics, then all is well. An example of how the government doesn't interfere and is perfectly happy to allow religious commerce to go on in Nanjing. There is what is soon to become the largest Bible printing company in the world. This is Amity Printing in Nanjing. We visited it when we were there in China, and they are producing 1 million Bibles a month, and they are going to be providing a pocket Bible, a bilingual pocket Bible, English-Chinese, to every Olympic village during the Olympics there, so that every Olympic person is going to be able to have a Chinese-English pocket edition of the Bible. Now, that seems amazing, but you see, that's no threat at all to the regime, or they don't see it as that.
You say that folk religions, while they're insignificant in the study of religions in the West, are very important when we study religions in China and the region around there. What do you mean?
Well, for one thing, so much of China is rural, and in these rural areas, traditional religion, that is to say superstition and occult beliefs, ancestor worship and magical rites, this kind of thing, go on to a gigantic extent. The Marxists tried to extirpate all of this, but they really were not successful in doing so. And the biggest problem with that kind of belief system was pointed out by a sociologist, a Chinese sociologist, C.K. Yang. And I quote him in my book. He said, "The organizational weakness of Chinese religions helps to keep religion in a subordinate structural position among social institutions, thus preventing any successful attainment by religion of structural dominance." Now, if you translate sociological English into English, what he is saying there is that folk religion is completely unorganized. It's a personal, traditional, magical kind of operation that will take place on family level and local community level, that sort of thing. And so it has absolutely no effect in a prophetic sense in influencing the institutions of the state or of improving the social fabric of the country. So these traditional religions have not been able to do anything for human rights at all. And apart from all of that, of course, theologically, this stuff has never saved anybody and never will.
You have written that these indigenous religions have an element of bowing to the inevitable.
Yes, exactly. And that bowing to the inevitable can easily be transmuted into a bowing to state authority, or to think that anything of a hierarchical nature needs to be supported and accepted. And this is highly dangerous. I mean, in the West, there have been some examples of this. In the Western Dark Ages, there was a tendency to accept anything that the church said or anything that the imperial power suggested. There's an old story that goes around in France about the peasant's faith. You go to the peasant and you say to him, "Why do you believe this?" And he says, "Because the priest told me." And you go to the priest and you say, "Why do you believe this?" And the priest says, "Because the bishop told me." And then you go to the bishop and the bishop says, "Well, because the archbishop," and so on up to the pope, right? Nobody actually has any reasons. They're simply accepting what the authority above them has to say. And these traditional religions in China have that kind of a style to them. So this is a highly dangerous thing, and it's probably one of the major factors as to why China has so easily accepted a vast number of different authoritarian figures across the centuries.
You have often said that whether it's this folk religion, Taoism, Confucianism, or to a large part Buddhism, all of these beliefs hold to a notion that man is essentially good, and that's been no help either. What do you mean?
Well, it has been said quite correctly that if one doesn't have a proper understanding of sin, then one will never have a proper understanding of salvation, because salvation is a redemption from sin. So, in the West, for example, or a cult like Christian Science that says there really isn't any evil, evil is an illusion, is of course not going to have any doctrine of the cross or any understanding of how sin is actually dealt with. And in the traditional religions of China and the major religions, Taoism, Confucianism, Buddhism, there is no serious understanding of the real problem of the human condition. Taoism is a mystical belief system. A system is really too strong a word for it. It's a mystical, vague religious point of view which never defines the human condition sufficiently. Confucianism is a morality, but a morality that's hopelessly conservative. Confucius went along with the powers that be, never criticized them at all. And in the case of Buddhism, Buddhism says that the real human problem is desire. Not desire for bad things, but desire in general. And if you think that desiring in itself, wanting, is the problem, then you're never going to try to do anything to help a society or change things.
So whether it's, and I want to take each one of these in their proper order when we come back from this break, but beginning with Buddhism, this notion that life is essentially trying to rid oneself of the self, or at least rid oneself of that wanting or desire, is really fertile ground for any kind of totalitarian mindset that may be imposed on top of it.
Oh, it surely is.
Then let's talk about Buddhism. Can you give us the thumbnail sketch of the Buddhist religion so that we can understand better how it plays into this conversation? About 2 minutes.
Yes. The first thing to note about it is that we really know almost nothing about its founder. The founder of Buddhism was a gentleman called Gautama. That's his Sanskrit name. And he was called the Buddha after he went through a personal enlightenment. He supposedly lived from around 560 to 480 BC, but we really know almost nothing about his life. What we have are documents that are way later than his own life, some two centuries after this. Now, that, you would think, would bother a Buddhist, but it really doesn't, because the essence of Buddhism is not historical information about Buddha himself. It is rather a teaching which consists of the Four Noble Truths and the Noble Eightfold Path. Well, what are these Four Noble Truths? First, all existence is suffering. Well, there may be a point to this. Look at the fact that the Jehovah's Witness always wakes you up on Saturday morning before you would normally get up. I mean, all existence is suffering, right? Right. Secondly, desire is the cause of suffering. And then thirdly, all suffering will therefore cease when we suppress all desires. The third is simply the logical conclusion of the first two. And fourthly, and this is, of course, what we've been waiting for, to eliminate desire, you need to adhere to the Noble Eightfold Path. And the Noble Eightfold Path consists of, and I quote, right belief, aspiration, speech, action, livelihood, endeavor, thought, and concentration. Well, if you look at the Eightfold Path, you see that this is something like the Boy Scout oath and law. Friendly, helpful, brave, clean, and reverent. I mean, we would have nothing against any of these things.
Let's take another break, Dr. Montgomery. I hate to interrupt you because it's all so good. When we come back, we'll talk about that Eightfold Path and those four laws contrasted with the teaching of Christianity and their result in the world by way of influence. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,500 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. Pastor Keith Vessel, Alexis Wernsing, Erica Bobby, Pastor Lou Ensor, Pastor Terry Allemeyer, Pastor Edwin Suflo, Ryan Peterson, Pastor Jason Shockman, Pastor William Kilps, and Pastor John Berg. Thanks for your support.
Could Adam speak right from the beginning?
Answers with Ken Ham, Australian lecturer and author.
When we read Genesis carefully, we find that Adam named the animals, and he also spoke with God. But newly created, wouldn't he have had to take time to learn a language? Well, not at all. Adam could speak right from the start. Now, some people find this concept hard to understand, but think about it. People today actually invent computers that make them respond to voices, and then even give answers by speaking back. You see, when humans make a computer, they program it so it will be fully functional. Now, if a man can build a machine to do such things, how much more could an infinite creator make the first man with a language that's already programmed in his brain? Adam, therefore, could name the animals. He could speak when he saw Eve and say, "Bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh." Adam wasn't like us at all. We're born as babies. We have to learn a language. Adam, though, was made fully functional. He didn't have to learn a language. He spoke from the day he was made.
The Bible also describes another Adam, the last Adam, Jesus Christ. Discover why that name when you watch our special DVD. It's also shown inside our new Creation Museum. For your gift of any size as we begin to close out the week here, we'll send the 16-minute DVD right out to you. Call us toll-free, 24 hours a day, at 1-888-89-ANSWERS, 888-89-ANSWERS, or on the web, answersoffer.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is our guest. We're talking about Chinese religions. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. talkback@issuesetc.org. Okay, you laid out the four laws in Buddhism and the eightfold path for the Buddhist. Let's contrast these, if we could, with what Christianity teaches regarding the very same subjects.
Well, Christianity certainly is in favor of moral ideals, such as are represented by the Eightfold Path. But Christianity recognizes that people simply do not attain the proper level in the area of ethical or moral action. For example, right belief. People don't believe rightly. They believe all kinds of lame-brain, ghastly things that are bad for them. They don't aspire as they should. Their speech is often defamatory. Their actions are occasionally hideous, as in the case of Nazi atrocities during the Second World War. Their endeavor, their thought, and their concentration all suffer. The human condition is such that people are selfish. They're basically selfish. They're out for number one. And Christianity says that because of this, they are incapable of saving themselves. One can't save oneself by getting rid of desire, or getting rid of anything else, or climbing up to heaven by one's own bootstraps. The only answer to the human condition would be for God Almighty to love us enough to come down to earth and take our selfishness on himself and deal with it on the cross. And since the wages of sin is death, that death on the cross was absolutely essential to make possible the salvation of mankind. So, suffering is dealt with by God himself in Christianity, whereas in Buddhism, it is regarded as something that we must ourselves somehow suppress. We must get rid of our desires. And if we were able to do this, according to Buddhism, we would then no longer go through the round of reincarnations, and we could enter nirvana, which is a reabsorption into the totality of being. It has no necessary sense of personal immortality, whereas in Christianity, Christ says, as I live, you shall live also. And we are promised, as the thief on the cross was promised, an eternal personal life in the presence of God through the love of Jesus Christ.
Someone's going to say, now, see, I've watched the news, and I see a Tibetan Buddhist, I see the Dalai Lama, he's all over the place. He is, one might even call him a full-blown human rights advocate or activist in the world. How does that square with what we have learned about the Chinese religion, Buddhism, and its basically its worldview?
Well, there's no way in the world that the Dalai Lama's activism could be shown to follow from Buddhist teaching. The Dalai Lama happens to have a great deal of concern for human suffering, and this is wonderful. We're delighted that that's the case, but it's possible to find exactly the opposite in Buddhism, and there's no way to show that the one follows from the other. Arthur Koestler, the novelist, wrote Darkness at Noon and so forth, spent a year drinking at the founts of Eastern wisdom. And one incident that he sets forth is that he was taken up this mountain by a priest, by a monk, and to visit this guru. And the guru was a woman, a gurette, I suppose. Anyway, during the half an hour that he spent with her, all she did was to pick her toenail. She did not say one word. And on the way down the mountain, Koestler was discouraged, and the monk said, "Ah, but she was telling you something." The problem is that no one is able to determine what Buddhism tells anybody. And Koestler finally rejected this, saying that Buddhism had been capable of providing kamikaze pilots during the Second World War, because there are no moral principles set forth there that are binding.
Let's talk a little bit about Taoism. You said there's hardly anything there, but it does appear to be a very influential religion for the Chinese people and elsewhere in the world.
Well, yes, and it's contemporary with Confucius, actually, the origins of it. But again, we don't know anything about the founder. All we have is a 248-word biographical sketch, which was written 500 years after after the founder supposedly lived. The founder's name is Lao Tse. The basic concept here is a concept known as the way or the path. That's the meaning of the Chinese word Tao, T-A-O, pronounced Tao. But nowhere is it defined. There is a translation of an early Taoist poem. This was done by a Dutch occultist, mystic, and detective writer, and the translation goes, you can't say the Tao exists, you can't say the Tao does not exist, but you can find it in the silence, in Wu Wei, which translates out as deedlessness. Huh? You don't know whether the Tao is there, you don't know whether it isn't there, but you can find it in silence and deedlessness, in other words, in doing nothing. Well, it's not going to be possible to develop much of a theology or ethic on that basis, for goodness sake.
And then Confucianism, which most people think is so very ancient, and of course it is, that it's not practiced by anyone anymore. Is this true?
Well, it never was a religion, really. It was an ethic, as far as Confucius was concerned. He was completely indifferent to questions of the afterlife. One of his sayings is, why should you be worrying about the afterlife when you're not handling your life right here properly? But after his death, he was venerated, and particularly the notion of ancestor worship conjoined with this. So that his conservative view of obeying your parents and concentrating on the family created cults of the family, and ancestor worship was incorporated within this. So it became a kind of folk religion in China. The difficulty with it, of course, is that it never presented any firm theology or any way that one could determine how one should live other than just following the authorities of the day. There's a condemnation of Confucianism by one of the very greatest of the authorities on Confucianism in the 19th century. This is James Legge, L-E-G-G-E, who translated a considerable number of Buddhist classics, and he simply takes Confucianism apart in pointing out that it simply was incapable of influencing society in any significant way at all. Let me quote just a few lines from Legge. Confucius' teaching was thus hardly more than pure secularism. He had faith in man, man made for society, but he did not care to follow him out of society, nor to present to him motives of conduct derived from a consideration of a future state. Good and evil would be recompensed by the natural issues of conduct within the sphere of time, if not in the person of the actor, yet in the persons of his descendants. See, again, this family business. If there were any joys of heaven to reward virtue or terrors of future retribution to punish vice, the sage took no heed of the one or the other. Confucius never appeared to give the evils of polygamy a thought. He mourned deeply the death of his mother, but no generous word ever passed his lips about women as women. Nor had he any idea of progress or the regeneration of society. The stars all shone to him in the same heaven behind. None beckoned brightly before. It was no doubt the moral element of his teaching springing out of his view of human nature, which attracted many of his disciples and still holds the best part of the Chinese men of learning bound to him. But the conservative tendency of his lessons is the chief reason why successive dynasties have delighted to do him honor. And, of course, that includes the present Marxist element. They don't mind Confucius at all because he says, shut up and do what you're told.
Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is our guest. Of course, the Olympics begin tomorrow in Beijing, China. We're discussing Chinese religions today on Issues, etc. What kind of questions do you have about Chinese religions, China, human rights there and in that region? Give us a call during this break. 1-877-623-MYIE. We have 10 more minutes with Dr. Montgomery on the other side of this break. 1-877-623-MYIE, or send us your email, talkback@issuesetc.org. We're coming to you live. It's Thursday, the 7th of August. 1-877-623-MYIE, or talkback@issuesetc.org. When we come back, any of these religions, whether it be the folk religion, the ancestor worship, the Buddhism, the Taoism, or the Confucianism, do any of them have a place for a transcendent God to whom we are accountable. What about the atheism that is also rampant in China? Of course, communism in itself as a worldview, as a political system, is atheistic, and so one would probably guess you're going to find a fair number of atheists there. What does this do for the welfare of the Chinese people? Stay tuned. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Issues Etc., Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. Thanks for your support of Issues Etc.
If you're interested in hanging around with a bunch of powerful men that further one another's careers, I guess you can meet Fred and Barney down at the Loyal Order of Water Buffalo. If stress is your problem, and those 40, 50 hours a week are killing you, and that cubicle's driving you nuts, perhaps you should buy Joel Osteen's book and read it. If you're interested in Lutheran doctrine and practice and how we can spread that to our communities, check us out, Brothers of John the Steadfast, www.steadfastlutherans.com.
It's not about you. It's about Jesus for you. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Will your church be one of the Issues Etc. 300? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. We're looking for 300 congregations to pledge $1,000 to Issues Etc. in their budgets. To find out more about the Issues Etc. 300, click the Sponsors section of our website, issuesetc.org. You'll even find a one-page informational flyer. Please consider including Issues Etc. in your church's mission or advertising budget. The Issues Etc. 300.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,500 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. Pastor David Anthony, Gina Whitner, Clinton Armstrong, Pamela Viscariello, Martha Spots, Mark Burkholz, Michael Mapus, Rob Uthoff, Carilla McKenzie, and Lloyd Harris. Thanks for your support.
I'd like to get you on a sailboat to China, all to myself alone.
Welcome back to Issues Etc., Chinese religions and their effect among the Chinese people. On the eve of the Beijing Olympics, Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're coming to you live this Thursday, August the 7th. We'd like to hear from you, 1-877-623-MYIE, or talkback at issuesetc.org. Our guest, Dr. John Warwick Montgomery, is director of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights. Dr. Montgomery, tell us a little bit about the Academy.
Well, it's the only Institute of Advanced Studies in Apologetics that defends the faith anywhere, and this coming summer, in July of 2009, we're having not only Professor Craig Parton, a regular on Issues Etc., and myself, but also Dr. Rod Rosenblatt of Concordia University, California, and Dr. Michael Horton, who is the chief of the White Horse Inn radio program, which is national in the United States. And he's a professor at Westminster Seminary West. These are wonderful lecturers, and it's an opportunity in a two-week period to deal with the major objections to the Christian faith in nine areas, and the best answers that can be provided in those areas. This means that you can be trained to do a far more effective witness for Christ than you would be able to do otherwise. This is desperately needed in the church today. Our young people go off to university and they've been given pious instruction, but they don't have the answers, and they're blown out of the water by secular professors. This takes place in the French Rhineland, and that means it's a perfectly wonderful atmosphere, and there are social occasions connected with the time, so that you'll have a great experience culturally as well as theologically. Only 20 people can do this each summer, and we already have three of those places that are occupied for this next summer. So it's only 17 other people are going to be able to do this. We really recommend that listeners to Issues Etc. who want to take part in this for this next year, contact us as quickly as possible and register.
You can check out the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, for more information on the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights. The on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Let's go to the phones and talk with Mark, who's listening in his car. Hi, Mark.
Pastor Todd, Dr. Montgomery, what always bothers me about Eastern religion is it seems like you're getting something from nothing. In other words, rules without a rule maker and a score, in other words, good and bad that affects your eternal destiny without a scorekeeper. I'm wondering, is that a fair criticism?
Thank you, Mark, very much. Dr. Montgomery.
Yes, I think it's a fair criticism. The fact of the matter is that you never really know in these instances where you are religiously. You don't know what kind of reincarnation is going to take place. There is a vague notion of sainthood. Gautama, in his enlightened state, had the choice, according to tradition, of either going directly into nirvana or not going quickly so that he could help others across the way, across the stream, and he chose the latter out of the goodness of his heart. But all of this is so vague that it doesn't provide any kind of assurances at all. And, eternity is a very long time, and there is the story of the king who was about to die, and his jester came to him and said, I understand you're going on a very long journey, and the king said, I am. And the jester said, well, when you've gone on journeys in the past, you've prepared yourself very well. What have you done to prepare yourself for this journey? And the king said, nothing. And there's so many people like that, aren't there? I mean, how desperately we need to have a word from God which is solid, and then pay attention to it.
Tony in St. Louis emails us saying, what about the many Buddhist sutras that expound on the Eight Noble Truths? What about the Bodhisattva concept? Your thoughts there, Dr. Montgomery.
Well, these are certainly variations within Buddhism. But again, why should one go along with that particular variation rather than any other? The reason why Eastern religions have influenced the New Age movement in the United States is simply this. New Agers want to be able to create religions that will make them feel good. The religions are pro-choice, right? The whole idea is that you're at the center and you choose. So within Buddhism, one could certainly look at a given variation, Mahayana, for example, over against Hinayana, and say, my, I prefer that. But does preference equal truth in any sense of the word? I mean, surely not. I may like a green pill better than a red pill, but if I don't know what the pill will do to me and I simply swallow it because it makes me feel better, I may very well end up dead.
Let's talk a little bit about atheism, which is, of course, the handmaiden of the communist mindset and worldview. What has atheism done by way – not that it – I mean, it can be classified as a religion of sorts, but what – where does it stand in the pantheon of Chinese religious views?
Well, it has very little influence in China except among doctrinaire party members and intelligentsia. The fact of the matter is that as you look across the board, the vast number of people in China, they reflect the fact that human beings are naturally religious. We want to worship. We are seeking, but the problem is that if we don't get into contact with proper answers, this is not going to get us very far. I've discussed Marxism in my book, Giant in Chains, as well, and I've done this in another book, The Shape of the Past. And I did a Marxist criticism of human rights years ago. The problem with Marxism, of course, is that it's based upon a false understanding of human nature and the idea that somehow by obliterating economic inequalities, you can change human nature. And that's never been the case. It's not been the case among the Marxists, and it hasn't been the case among American liberals who've thought that by tearing down slums, they can change people.
Then with only 1 minute, Dr. Montgomery, before our conversation closes, in any of these beliefs that we find among the Chinese people, save Orthodox Christianity, is there a transcendent God, not only to whom we are accountable, but also a transcendent God that will sully himself in the affairs of human beings to affect their salvation? 1 minute.
Well, that doesn't take a minute. The answer to that is no. It isn't present anywhere in any of those religions. That's why China so desperately needs the gospel of Jesus Christ. And I trust that the Olympics may provide that opportunity, especially through this vast distribution of Chinese-English Bibles that are taking place there. Incidentally, I'm not going to be there myself. Athletics has never been my strong point. I've been waiting for chess to arrive at the Olympics as a major sport, and since it hasn't, I'm not going to be doing much there myself.
Dr. John Warren Montgomery is Professor Emeritus at the University of Bedfordshire in England. He's a French advocate, barrister at law in England and Wales, and a member of the bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He serves as Distinguished Research Professor of Philosophy and Christian Thought at Patrick Henry College. He's author and editor of more than 50 books, including Giant in Chains. Dr. Montgomery, thank you so much for being our guest.
You're most welcome.
Think about that for a moment. We're talking about in excess of 1 billion people within the borders of modern-day China. That's fully one-sixth, if not more, of the planet's population. It is a great tragedy that they live under the oppressive communist regime that they do. But there is a greater oppression afoot in China or elsewhere in the world where these religions hold sway over the minds and the hearts and the lives of people, where the gospel has yet to shine, or where it is shining but only in a highly controlled way, serving the purposes of the state rather than of the church and its savior. The greater oppression is the darkness, the oppression, the repression of unbelief. Oh yes, the Chinese people believe a great many things. Their religions are fascinating in terms of what they believe, but it is still darkness rather than light. Are there glimmers of truth in there? Small truth, small t? Well, of course there are. As in any belief system, there's going to be some truth, small t, but the truth, capital T, the one who says, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and no one comes to the Father except through me, Jesus Christ, is not to be found in these worldviews or these religions, Buddhism, Taoism, Confucianism, ancestor worship. And that is more repressive than any communist government could ever imagine being. What is needed there? Well, certainly freedom in a civil sense, that would help. But what will really help is the gospel of Jesus Christ, the message of the God who comes from outside this world, gets his hands dirty, taking our sins, all of our sins, on himself at the cross, and pays for those sins 100%, Jesus Christ. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 1046, San Juan Capistrano, California, 92693. Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.